Au hea o ko e ko ka aha. Inā he kuleana i mua o kēia aha ho o kolo kolo ki e ki e hano hano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. E nāi mai, e malio mai, i lohe ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh, give you attention and you shall be heard.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-16798, State of Hawaii versus Sardina. Arguing for the petitioner, Thomas M. Otake. Arguing for the respondent, Stephen K. Tsushima, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good afternoon. Aloha, everyone. Our proceeding today is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel. During the proceeding, if one of the justices has a question, they'll raise their hand virtually, and I'll call upon them at the earliest opportunity. We'll begin by asking our attorneys to introduce themselves in the order in which they'll be arguing.
Good afternoon, Justices. May it please the Court. Thomas Otake on behalf of Bronson Sardina.
Good afternoon.
For the record, may it please the Court, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Stephen Tsushima on behalf of the State of Hawaii. Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Associate Justices.
Good afternoon. Just to confirm, Mr. Otake, you've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a visual and audio warning when you're 20 minutes into your argument. Mr. Tsushima, you've asked for a 10-minute warning, so we'll do that for you as well. And then at the end of your respective 30 minutes, you'll also get another warning and sound that you will hear. At this point, Mr. Otake, would you please begin your argument?
Thank you. We're here today to discuss whether the Intermediate Court of Appeals gravely erred when, in our opinion, it misconstrued and misapplied the 30-year-old same episode test set forth by the Hawaii Supreme Court in State versus Carroll, and then the more recent same episode test set forth in State versus Akau that focused on probable cause. The Hawaii Supreme Court in the Carroll case and in also subsequent cases like Cervantes and Akau has always interpreted the phrase same episode in a way that was consistent with the policies behind Hawaii compulsory joinder statutes. Those policies, of course, being that a defendant should not have to face the expense and uncertainties of multiple trials based on essentially the same episode, and also the dual consideration of fairness to the defendant and society's interest in efficient law enforcement. In misapplying the Hawaii Supreme Court tests from the Carroll and Akau cases in particular, the Intermediate Court of Appeals weakened Hawaii's compulsory joinder statutes and the protections they afford. And of course, the ICA should not alter or weaken Hawaii Supreme Court precedents. When applying Hawaii Revised Statute 71109 and the Carroll and Akau tests to the facts of this case, it is clear that the circuit court judge got it right. There's no disputes as to the first two prongs of HRS 71109. It's undisputed that the prosecutor knew of both charges, the fled scene and related charges and the assault against law enforcement officer charges when the first charge was filed, the fled scene charges. Both criminal offenses were within the jurisdiction of the circuit court, so there's no dispute over those two prongs. The issue, of course, comes down to whether or not the two cases arose from the same episode. The test provided in State versus Carroll 30 years ago is still good law today, and it is clear. It says, in view of the dual considerations of fairness to the defendant and society's interest in efficient law enforcement, we hold that the test for determining the singleness of a criminal episode should be based on whether the alleged conduct was so closely related in time, place, and circumstance that a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to details of the other charge. When you apply that test to this case, as the circuit court judge did, it is clear that the dismissal was the right decision. The time factor, as we discussed in our briefing, just a little over an hour. And if you look at the Akau case, you know, in that case, it was anywhere between 5 and 49 days. And that was still not too long of a time period to say that the offenses were related in time. So clearly, a little over an hour shouldn't be an issue. The place factor, again, 2.1 miles away. We're not talking about saying that they both occurred in the city and county of Honolulu, which obviously past cases has said is too broad, but generally the same neighborhood, which is why the same officers showed up to both offenses. The circumstance factor, of course, again, is probably the key here.
Okay, can you tell? We have a question from Justice Wilson.
Sure.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Mr. Otake, you were referring to the Carroll test and made a reference to the Carroll test requiring that the cases be combined with be a compulsory joinder if a complete account can be made without reference to the other case. I think the way you put it was that it was necessary to have a joinder if a complete account could not be made without reference to the other case. And let me ask you if you could be specific. What required reference to the fled scene charge in the course of prosecuting the assault case?
Thank you, Your Honor. When you look at the reports written by the officers that responded to the assault again, well, responded to the argument call at Nancy's, which then later turned into the assault against law enforcement officer case, it is clear from what the officers wrote that it was the questioning of the officers about the potential involvement in the fled scene case that led to allegedly Mr. Sardina becoming more upset at the officers and which led to the assault. When you look, for example, at Officer Wynn's report, which is in the record, he describes it as this: I then recognized the same license plate which was involved in a motor vehicle collision earlier in the night. I then asked the male if he got his driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. He immediately said, I got nothing. He got into my face. He started saying some things he shouldn't have said to the officers. And then he asked me to take off my badge and gun and if he wanted to fight. Probably more indicative of it is what Officer Sissoko says. He says, I observed Sardina. I walk over to the white SUV. I noticed the vehicle he walked up to and got inside of had damage to the front end of the vehicle. I saw that the vehicle, the front license, Hawaii license plate, which was on the white SUV. I recognized the vehicle license plate was said to have been involved in the accident where it fled the scene. Sardina then stepped out of the white SUV. I informed him that the vehicle he was sitting in was involved in a motor vehicle accident where it had fled the scene. And this is the important part. The officer Sissoko then says that in response to that, he then got even more irritated and stated that it's not his car and that he was not inside of the car just now. And then he got in Officer Wynn's face and then it went on from there. So,
Mr. Otake, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you've just recited cases that connect the two offenses, but I think the proposition that is at issue is whether the government could have proven the assault case without reference to the prior fled scene case. And is it your understanding that there was some way that the government could, do you see a way the government could proceed with prosecuting the assault case without reference to the fled scene case?
I respectfully think the issue is more, could you have gotten through an entire trial on the assault against a law enforcement officer case without the fled scene case coming up? And And that came up in the circuit court, and the circuit court judge agreed that there was no way. I mean, surely the state could try to navigate around that, but it would have came up because it's no doubt that it was the questioning about his involvement in the fled scene case that led to Mr. Sardina becoming irate and allegedly assaulting the officer. So it was and the context of it.
And you have mentioned the what might be the need and the necessity of the government covering those facts in its case. But do you think it's relevant as well that it might have been necessary for the defense to refer to these cases, to these facts in the fled scene case?
Absolutely. You know, when you look at the Caro test, it doesn't talk about which party. It just talks about whether a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to details of the other charge. It's not specific to just the prosecutors making that account. I think it's talking about, can you have a trial and give a complete account of one charge without having to discuss or refer to details of the other? And the language is a complete account. So to give a complete account of the assault against law enforcement officer case, you have to talk about the fled scene case, because that was arguably the reason why Mr. Sardina got upset when the officers were accusing him of being involved in the fled scene case.
We have a question from Justice Nakayama, followed by Justice Edens.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Mr. Otake, first, your client does a hit and run on Farrington Avenue, and he flees the scene. An hour later, and this is on Farrington Avenue, Farrington Highway, correct. An hour later, different police officers are called to a different scene in Waipio, where he's involved in an argument with a woman. And the police, different police show up there. And the woman says, I'm okay, I called my mother. She's gonna come and pick me up. But Mr. Sardina stays there. So the police officers, because they're good officers, stay there also. And then the defendant goes, sits in his car. It's got front end damage, and they notice it's got the same license plate. When they do ask for his ID, which, and he is, as you mentioned, belligerent and saying really unpleasant things to the police officers, challenging them, saying racist things. He goes back and they notice that they said, we think that you have we think there's an arrest warrant, but can you stay here while we determine whether it's a valid arrest warrant? We're going to see, and this is for another matter, right? This isn't the fled scene case. This is another matter that he has a warrant for his arrest now. So at the time that they're asking him, can you please sit in the police car while we make sure there is a valid arrest warrant out, that's when he headbutts the police officer in the face. And they had told him at that time, we're detaining you to determine whether there's a valid police, there's an arrest warrant. So they aren't, and as the ICA said, they're not arresting him for the fled the scene. They don't have probable cause yet to arrest him for fleeing the scene. They are detaining him because there's an arrest warrant on another matter. How can that, and it's not just whether you have a complete account. The whole, again, you mentioned this, the whole phrase is whether the alleged conduct was so closely related in time, place, and circumstance. Here he hits a car on Farrington Highway and flees the scene. An hour later, everybody says he's intoxicated, a drunken fight with a woman. How is that related? How can that be so closely related in time, place, and circumstance that rushing to the courthouse and pleading to one means that you can't be charged with the assault on the police officer?
Thank you. So several things, kind of take them in the order that you asked them. You know, the first point is it was actually all the officers that responded knew about the fled scene, and two of the officers that responded were the same two officers that had responded to the fled scene.
Eventually,
the first two were not, but they knew about it.
Yes.
They knew about it. Then when you look at, again, the language from the Carroll case that talks about, can you give a complete account of one charge without referencing the other? I again go back to Officer Sissoko's report where he says, I informed him that the vehicle he was sitting in was involved in a motor vehicle accident where it had fled the scene. He then got more irritated and stated it was not his car, and it went on from there. So again, it was the questioning about the fled scene that prompted them to ask for his license, his ID, and his registration. And it was the questioning about the fled scene that led to him becoming more irate, that led to the eventual headbutt. So when you look at the term, a complete account, if you want to give a complete account of the assault against an LEO case, you have to talk about what the questioning was related to the fled scene. Now, Your Honor, as to your questioning, I would respond this way. When you look at the State versus Carroll test, this is what I would say, and this is where I would submit the Intermediate Court of Appeals got it wrong. On page 11 of their opinion, when they were trying to distinguish the word that, right, where it says that a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referencing the other, and they tried to say, well, it's not because it's that, but that's essentially saying the same thing. And my point is, when it says that a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to details, that's the Supreme Court telling us, how do we gauge, how do we test, how do we evaluate if the conduct was closely enough related in time, place, and circumstance? It's not a separate thing. It's not and. It's not, it's related in time. It's related in place. It's related in circumstance. And you cannot talk about one without the other. It's related in time, place, and circumstance. And the way you assess that and gauge that is, can you talk about one without the other in complete
detail? Isn't the idea, though, that you don't want to have an incident that's basically the same incident? The defendant goes to trial and is found not guilty of that, and the police go and say, okay, we're going to charge you for something else that happened during that same incident. I mean, that's the unfairness that you don't, that you're trying to avoid with a 109. So,
and
completely different places, completely different offenses.
Well, you know, with all due respect, when you mention it in terms of incident, I think that's probably similar to Your Honor's dissent in the Akal case, where I think you focus on substantial factual nexus and otherwise. And I would respectfully submit that it's not, it doesn't say incident, it says episode. And I think that's where I would respectfully submit is the difference. One could maybe say this was different incidents in that they didn't take place at the exact same time, but in terms of, was this the same episode, which is a little broader, and the Carroll case talks about how you assess if it was the same episode, and it gives you a gauge of how to assess that, which is, can you talk about one completely without referencing the other? So, but, you know, that's at least our position, and I think...
Mr. Otake, we have, if you finish your thought, Justice Edens and Justice McKenna both have questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. Ms. Otake, you know, I look at the ICA's decision and their analysis when they conduct the closely related and circumstances analysis, and they basically shake out and say that, hey, look, there really wasn't probable cause for the traffic crimes. You quoted a cow for the PC idea, and you have stated that, you know, although your client was in the driver's seat of a car, he's clearly identified that vehicle, at least, is fleeing the scene. He's somewhat evasive, and despite being in the car, being seen in the car by the police officers, he claims he was not in the car. And what the ICA said was Sardina, in this PC analysis, could have been a passenger rather than a driver, or may not have been present at the time of the accident. You know, it strikes me that the ICA is theorizing about a possible defense at trial. Can you explain your take here with both your case, Sardinia, and then just real world, what the police might actually do if confronted with a similar scenario, as far as whether the circumstances here established a PC for the traffic crimes?
Sure, and that is something that I would hope would come up, because I, I, I really strongly disagree with the intermediate court's analysis to suggest that there wasn't probable cause for the fled scene case. They make it a point that it was the same vehicle, no doubt, involved in the fled scene case. It was an hour earlier, a couple miles away, and he was in the driver's seat. He smelled like alcohol. He was upset and defensive when they questioned him about the fled scene case, and they asked for his driver's license, insurance, and no fault, because they suspected, probably strongly suspected, that he was involved in the fled scene case. And that's exactly what probable cause is. It's just a strong suspicion that someone committed the crime. So I think clearly there was probable cause. And, you know, in the real world, well, in terms of practical applications, I would submit we've seen cases with less than that in which probable cause was found. And so our position is that clearly it was the circumstances around this assault on law enforcement officer case that led to probable cause that Mr. Sardina was involved in the scene case. And again, it's not proof beyond a reasonable guilt. It's just proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's just, was there a strong suspicion that he was involved in the fled scene? And given the time and the distance and the fact that he got in the driver's seat and the way he was behaving and the way he was arguably intoxicated, I think that all provided more than enough probable cause.
You know, I wanted to ask you one thing, shifting gears a little bit, because you've quoted some of the policy aspects of the compulsory joinder law. Let's say this. Let's say the prosecution in this case didn't offer you a plea agreement inducing a plea on the very date that they indicted your client on another case. In other words, you have two cases simultaneously pending. Regarding your client's constitutional right to testify or not to testify in both cases, can you explain the practical impact that a failure to join would have on defense decision-making about the exercise of these fundamental constitutional rights?
And you know, I think that is really part of the problem here. You look at all of the different strategic decisions that go into this, whether or not to testify. Obviously, if there is a, you know, two separate pending cases you know about, he's not going to testify in one while there's a felony pending. Whether or not to use a deferral, we all know that, you know, long story short, you typically only get one deferral. And so maybe you use a deferral thinking that this is it, and then they turn around the next day and indict you on something that you would have saved the deferral for. Trial strategy. You know, it's conceivable that if somebody admits to, pleads guilty to the fled scene case, you know, that guilty plea could conceivably be later used against him in the assault against LEO case. Additionally, plea bargaining. You know, obviously, if these cases were brought together, you know, there would have been an effort to get the misdemeanors and fled scene cases dismissed entirely and maybe done a deferral on the felony somehow, got it reduced. So it affects a whole number of decisions. And that's part of the unfairness to the defendant in this process. I mean, it was literally the same day. I mean, we had no idea about it. We went out to have a district court, and it wasn't a race to the courthouse. It some time had passed, and the prosecutors had more than enough time to bring these cases together. And we went out to the courthouse in Eva, and we took care of it and thought it was done. And only later found out that later that same morning, I'm not saying that the prosecutors, you know, necessarily waited the timing of it, but it worked out that way. And later that same morning, or soon thereafter, found out that there was a warrant on a felony from what we believed was essentially the same episode. So with that, I think my 20 minutes is probably a little passed up. So I would like to save some time for everybody.
Questions. Two justices who have been waiting patiently. So
sure. Let's have Anna
and Justice Wilson ask their questions. So,
sure. Justice Anna.
Thank you, Mr. Otake. First, I have two questions. First, I want to make sure I understand. If the assault on a law enforcement officer had been charged first and you had pled to it, you would take the same position that if the fled scene was later charged, 701-109 would preclude that charge. Is that your position?
You know, that's a really good question, and one I've actually wrestled with, because I the short answer is yes, but I do acknowledge that I think there is some, you know, practically speaking, you know, if you take, for example, the case, there was another case that dealt with the insurance fraud and neg injury. And in that case, the, you know, I mean, I think that the point of that case was you could talk about, in theory, the neg injury without talking about the insurance fraud, but you couldn't talk about, you know, the reverse didn't work. And so I wrestled with that here, because arguably you could talk about the fled scene case without talking about the assault case. But in reality, you couldn't in the end, because when I thought it through, it was the interactions related to the assault on the law enforcement officer case that then led to the PC for the fled scene case. So, you know, it's a really interesting question. I thought a lot about it. And my short answer is the way the Carroll test reads, I would take the same position.
I apologize. Please go
ahead. That's okay. My second question relates to, I'm wondering, in terms of, we keep talking about probable cause, PC, and I'm just wondering, you know, like, are we saying that if there had been let's say that there had been another incident the day before, and the same officers had responded, and the for some reason at the argument appearance when the officer showed up, same officer said, you know what, we now think you're the one that was involved in the incident the day before. And then your client gets upset and headbutts the police officer. Are you saying that under those circumstances, those cases would be, and then let's say that the prior case was the incident the day before was charged, and then you pled to it, and then they charged the assault against a police officer case. Are you still saying that 701-109 would apply in that situation?
You know, that's another interesting question that I've had similar thoughts about that. And I think I'd say this. I mean, part of what I've struggled with is the Akau case and its interrelation to the Carroll case. And where I settled on it is I think primarily where Justice Acoba came down in his concurrence, which is, you know, his concurrence in the Akau case makes clear that the probable cause test set forth in Akau by the majority, it does not need to be present in every situation. That is just one way that the cases could be related in time, place, and circumstances, where you can't talk about one without talking about the other. So it's just one way. It doesn't need to be present in every case. And the Akau opinion, the majority opinion, circles back to the Carroll test and kind of reaffirms it. So to your question, Your Honor, I would submit that, you know, it would depend. But if it was the probable cause, if they responded to the scene and in investigating, you know, in the same way they investigated something else and they saw the damage to the car and the way he was acting, and they then thought, okay, there's probably probable cause to the fled scene, and then it happened that way a day later. You know, I think that it would still pass the Akau probable cause test and arguably the Carroll test as well. And you know, I think it's interesting because when you look at, you know, the time factor, you know, the cases, you know, like Akau, for example, where it's 5 to 49 days, I think a day later wouldn't really change the analysis a whole lot. I mean, I'm sure there's probably limits to that at some point, but So yeah, I would answer that. I think my analysis would be the same under your fact pattern.
Thank you.
Okay, Justice Wilson.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Otake, I also am interested in your perspective on the Akau probable cause test, if you want to call it that. I think you clarify that you think that Akau just meant that where you have probable cause, it's powerful evidence that it would be necessary to have a joinder of the cases. But with that in mind, Let me ask you what you think the standard should be. I mean, the proximity test of time, place, and circumstances is referred to in the Carroll case as something that is will necessarily enter into policy considerations, but it didn't indicate that those are the only things that could be considered. So are we talking about more of a totality of circumstances test to see whether the evidence does overlap? And if that's the case, how would you define the degree to which the cases should overlap in order for there to be a joinder? Is it any overlap?
Well, I think going back to some of what Justice Edens was asking, I mean, the reason why I think the Carroll test gets it right is because when you cannot tell the account of one charge without referring to details of another, that is going to implicate a whole realm of different, you know, very important decisions strategically and otherwise that the defendant and his attorney has to make. And I think the Carroll test gets it right. And the point of it is to encourage, if not, you know, require prosecutors as they go about exercising their great discretion in how to charge cases to do it in a fair way. And I think that, you know, the Carroll test has been around for 30 years. I think that the, you know, a Cal test about probable cause fits well under the Carroll test. I think the Cervantes test, where it talks about even if one other case has to come up in a suppression hearing on the other case, that counts as well. And I think that fits under the Carroll test. So I think to answer your question, Your Honor, I think the Carroll test is a really good test that sets forth a very clear way for prosecutors to gauge. And frankly, because of the policy issues at play, frankly, err on the side of joining cases that should be joined. And I think the Carroll test makes that clear for a prosecutor, that if there's any question if these cases should be joined, join them out of fairness to the defendant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Otake. We'll turn to Mr. Tsushima at this point, and we've gone over your time, but I will give you some time for rebuttal, Mr. Otake, since you're asking questions there at the end. So
thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. We ask this court to affirm the decision of the ICA because 701-109 does not apply to this case, where the offenses occurred at different times, different places, and most importantly, under different circumstances. In this respect, the traffic offenses and the assault offense are completely separate episodes. Petitioner appears to argue that because the probable cause for the fled scene case was arguably discovered, and he uses the word arguably in his cert, at some time at the scene of the assault case, that pursuant to a COW, the circumstances prong of the Carroll test had been met. However, defendant's argument overlooks Akau's reasoning and analysis. And there's two important factors. When this court discussed the probable cause factor, the facts and circumstances in Akau of the first discovered offense itself provided sufficient probable cause. That is, as Akau stated, the three previous drug buys provided sufficient probable cause for the search warrant. Whereas in this case, the probable cause wasn't even established at the scene of the assault case. And more importantly, it wasn't established by the assault offense itself. The second thing that this court pointed out in Akau was that the circumstances were similar in as much as all of the cases were drug cases. So what this court has pointed out in Akau is that the probable cause test alone doesn't necessarily establish circumstances. That doesn't end where this court looks at to determine whether the circumstances prong of the Carroll test has been met. It's for those main reasons that we believe petitioner's reliance upon a Carroll and the probable cause analysis test should fail. Actually, that's actually longer than most introductions that I have. So I actually welcome any questions that this court may have.
Well, Justice McKenna has a question for you, Mr. Tsushima. Justice McKenna.
Mr. Tsushima, thank you. If you could, in terms of the record, was Mr. Sardina charged with the contempt or whatever warrant he was apparently arrested for that night?
I don't believe the record does show. Somebody may be able to correct me on that, but I don't believe that would have been shown. Yeah.
Thank you.
I believe that would have had to come up at the hearing. That's why. Correct, Justice McKenna? I don't know where else it would show.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm just wondering. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't believe that was submitted or stipulated by the parties.
I see. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Mr. Tsushima, Justice Wilson has a question, and then I'll have one after that. Justice Wilson.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Tsushima, you mentioned the probable cause test in relation to these facts. Let me be clear about your thoughts on that analysis. Are you saying that in order for there to be a joinder, there had to be probable cause developed for the assault case through the fled scene case?
Sorry, could you repeat that question?
Are you saying that it would be necessary, in order for a joinder to take place, it would be necessary under a COW that the facts in the fled scene case would constitute probable cause for the assault case?
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying when you apply the probable cause analysis case, that actually only goes to the circumstances factor of the Carroll test.
Okay, but
I'm not saying it's required. No, probable cause wouldn't be required.
Okay, if that's the case, the
circumstance.
If probable cause wasn't required and you look at the circumstances of this case, as I think has been discussed previously, this idea of overlapping evidence seems to be central to the notion of whether there should be a joinder. And Mr. Otake has stated that it would be necessary for the defense to bring in evidence about what had happened previously in order to explain, I guess, the behavior of the defendant during the time that he allegedly committed the assaults. So wouldn't that mean that in that sense, we're talking about a similarity between cases that was anticipated by the test in Carroll? In other words, this overlapping evidence?
Right, I agree. And well, overlapping evidence is where I disagree. There would be mention, and Mr. Otake has referred to that a lot, that there would be mention of one case in the other case. And when you look at the language of the Carroll test, and that's that the conduct was so closely related in time, place, and circumstance that a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to the details of the other charge. Now, that language, I think, can be broken up into two parts. The first part being a complete account of one charge cannot be related. Now, I was wondering about that language myself, and I was wondering where to look. And of course, the Carroll test was taken from the Boyd case, which was an Oregon case. And then I looked at the Oregon cases, which tried to interpret what that language really meant. And when you look at the Oregon cases, there's a couple of them. When they look at what they mean by a complete account of one charge, they mean proof of that charge, meaning can that charge.
Well, we're continuing. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're continuing to look at it from the point of view of the necessity of proving the case. Let me ask you this. If Mr. Sardine's defense was, the reason I was so belligerent was because of the way they handled things with respect to this fled scene case, which I wasn't guilty of. Would you think that that was a significant connection because it was necessary for the defense to bring in evidence of the prior offense? Would that satisfy your test?
No, because it wouldn't touch upon the policy considerations of 70109, and that's where there's going to be interrelated issues and evidence and testimony. So defendant could clearly testify to those matters.
I don't quite understand that point of view because obviously we can agree that the idea of not having the defendant have to retry case after case or, you know, to spare the harassment of having multiple charges brought where the same evidence is being brought would seem to be a policy that would apply where the defendant might have use the same defense. In other words, he may say in the fled scene case, I didn't do it, and the officers were being, whatever their attitude was, they decided to bring this charge when it wasn't really me. And he would be able to, and potentially would be using the same defense in the assault case where he says, look, I mean, this is something that was happening multiple times that night. And again, the officers were being belligerent, and that's why I responded. It just seems to me that from a defense point of view, you would be hard pressed to say that it would be best for the cases to be brought separately where the defendant asserts that defense first in one case and then asserts it again in the later case. Isn't that something that was anticipated with 701-109 to try to make sure that that kind of multiple defense wasn't taking place?
I think that would be true if the two offenses you're talking about are related such that the time, place, and circumstance prongs are met. And the circumstance prong that isn't met is that, particularly with this case, I'll talk about this case, because you're talking about a fled scene case that had occurred at a different location. You're talking about officers that necessarily would have had to investigate that case. Now, what this record doesn't show is that the officers that were involved in the assault case, now, Mr. Otake has made reference of they knew about the fled scene case. I mean, that's it. He's not saying they were involved in the investigation of the fled scene case. That they knew about the license plate number probably just implies they heard it over the APB. But we're talking about two separate sets of officers. We're talking about the fled scene officers that would be used to testify in that trial. And then the assault officers, actually, it'd only be officers of SOCO that would be necessary to prove that case.
I'm not sure how the fact that there are different officers would apply to the defense that said, look, this is the way that the behavior of the officers took place in both cases, and this is what was taking place. And I want to make the point that this is the kind of, my defense is, this is the kind of action that led to provoking me and also misrepresentation. I mean, whether it was 4, 5, or 10 officers, if it's the defense is that this was taking place with both offenses, the same attitude, regardless of who the officers were.
Well, I think it goes to the question you had asked Mr. Otake earlier, and it's whether there's just any overlap in the circumstances or reference to the other case, if that matters. And my response would be, no, it's not just reference or that it would be referred to in the other case. It is the evidence. And both Justice Nakayama and Justice Akova commented about this in a cow. If I can quote Justice Nakayama first, it's related to substantive overlap and whether there's interrelated proof. Justice Nakayama said this, and I'm paraphrasing. Offenses arising from the same criminal episode include offenses connected in such a manner that prosecution of the offenses will involve substantially interrelated proof. If proof of one of the crimes charged is not relevant to proof of the other, then the two crimes do not involve interrelated proof, as a matter of law, are not part of the same criminal episode. Justice Akova then, also in a cow, in his concurring opinion, says, the crucial question is whether, in considering the evidence known at the time of the first charging decision, a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to the details of the other charge, such that evidence to present it in one case would substantively overlap evidence in the other case. And that's just the point I'm trying to make, Justice Wilson. It's not just the mentioning, not just defendant's reliance on its defense to have to refer or mention, as Mr. Otake has said numerous times, but it's actually referring to the proof overlapping elements such that there's overlap. And that's what I think 701-109 speaks to.
Mr. Tsushima, Mr. Otake cited a number of practical examples of prejudice or tough choices a defendant would have to make in determining how to proceed on the fled scene case. And he also argued that in these circumstances, or what the statute envisions, is that there should be an erring on the side of joining cases to joining possible counts in order to avoid those kinds of tough decisions, or at least, I guess, empower the defendant to have the decision whether to ask move to sever or not. What's your response to those arguments?
particularly as it refers to the circumstances of this case or just in general?
This case, but more generally, I think. Okay. I'm kind of interested in the longer term implications of what we might do.
Well, again, where it would apply, I think Mr. Otake does make a good point. But based on what this court has said in numerous cases involving 701, 109, it appears when the charges aren't the same, the state shouldn't be charging together when there are different elements involved, charges of totally different character. This court has said repeatedly, I think it was first in Kele'ua and then repeated again in Akau, those shouldn't be brought together because they're so different. And as it applies to this case, where defendant had pled to the fled scene case, there are other remedies for defendant, including a motion to withdraw his plea under the circumstances, given that the assault case complaint was filed on the day that he pled. And it would probably be appropriate for the court to grant that, especially if one of the circumstances he's contemplating is a global type plea agreement.
Justice Edens.
Mr. Tsushima, I'm wondering whether you agree it's not just from the perspective of the prosecution's case in chief when you're evaluating Carroll's compulsory joinder test, but instead a court must also consider whether the defense case, and after all, the defense has a right to present a complete defense, testify or not testify, cross-examine witnesses, call police officers as witnesses, whether considering that the defense's side can provide a complete account of one charge, in this case, the LEO offense, without referring to details of the other charge.
Yes, I don't agree with that. And again, it's because of when I looked at what have other courts, including our court, have said about what does it mean when a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to the details of the other charge. And what they're looking at is the proof of the charges. So not looking at it from the defense perspective or defendant's, it doesn't ask the prosecution to like go into the head of the defense and what he might potentially be using as a defense, but rather whether the proof overlaps each other.
Thank you. One follow-up, it's a different area. You know, let's say there was a high-speed chase and the police officers, got over the dispatch that somebody had banged a car. So they're following the car. They don't really see the driver. They lose sight of the driver. About an hour and a half later, they find what looks like the car. They match the license plate. They see damage to the car. They then see somebody hanging out by the car. That person gets into the driver's seat of the car. So their antenna's up. The guy gets out of the driver's seat. They question him. He says, I wasn't in the car, even though they just saw him in the car. He's belligerent. Then he headbutts the officer. Wouldn't there be compulsory joinder in that case? And how is that different than our situation?
I want to ask just because I might have missed a couple of facts. Were they able to identify who the driver was when they were observing him initially?
No, they weren't. And I guess to make it simple, the only difference being in the scenario I just gave you was that police officers were actually on the road following the person.
Oh, so they never lost.
Versus showing up and happening to see him at Nancy's kitchen.
Okay, so they never lost visual contact with the.
Well, they did.
Oh, they did.
They lost visual contact.
How long?
For about an hour and a half, the exact same. Okay. So in other words, same scenario. Yeah. Except that the police were actually on the scene, the same police officers who later found him at the parking lot. I don't see much difference in that situation. And it would seem in that situation, you would have to join the two cases.
Well, no, I disagree. Would the violations have been before they lost visual contact?
Well, when we talk about fleeing the scene, there's also several other violations. There'd be license violations. There might be reckless driving, right, inattention that they might have, witnessed themselves. But yeah, that's the scenario. And if you could just give me your take on that and how that would really, how does that differ or not from our scenario?
I guess I'm missing the part. I don't want to miss the part that's different from our scenario. But the main part of our scenario, I'll focus on that, is that there was no, the police officers didn't have any information as to who the driver was. They only had the license plate number. So they didn't have even information whether a description of the driver.
Well, the driver was male. I'm sorry to interject here, but that does apply in my hypothetical. Well, they didn't see the driver. They don't know who that driver is.
Right. And that's the same problem that we have in this scenario, is because and that was going to be my point about Mr. Otake's claim that there is probable cause in this case, because there wasn't probable cause just by seeing the defendant in the driver's seat. There would have to be something further. What I mean by that is, like, for probable cause, because there was such a break between the last time the police officers had seen this vehicle, as Orit was mentioned in the briefing, and I think by the ICA, defendant might not have even been driving, defendant might not have even been in the car. And actually, based on just what we have from the assault on police officer reports, we don't know who else was with them at the scene. Now, the investigation into the fled scene reports probably would have that information, because what I would suspect what those reports might show is what the probable cause was in this case, because what you can kind of gather just by reading the assault against police officer reports is that at some point they did have PC. We admit that. And of course, because he got cited. But an investigation likely ensued after these matters. And we don't have that in our possession. We don't know what it was. But I would suggest it would be an utterance by a defendant. It may be an eyewitness or the victim was able to identify him. We don't know in this case, because these reports don't speak to that. The fled scene reports would have spoken to that.
Let me just say this, is the district court had filed the citation in this case. We could perhaps take judicial notice of that. And in that citation, as I saw it, one of the officers said that Mr. Sardinia made a statement about him driving the car. How does that play into what you just told me?
Because that shows that defeats Mr. Otake's argument that at the time he was arrested on the assault against police officer, that they had probable cause for the fled scene. I don't know if that ticket also shows the time at which that was made, but I would assume it was after, because all this scuffling with Sardina was happening kind of, I don't think an investigation would have been occurring at that point. And I would think our assault against police officer reports would have shown that utterance that you said he made.
Justice Wilson.
Thank you. So, Mr. Tsushima, I concede that it wasn't really necessary that probable cause be established for the assault charge as a result, or rather, I guess your argument is that it was probable cause that was obtained as to the fled scene case as a result of the assault. And if in fact that probable cause was established as a result of the fled scene case, you would concede that the joinder would be necessary, right?
Could you just repeat the last part of that question again?
Is it your position that if there had been probable cause established during the course of the assault case for the fled scene case, that there would be a joinder necessary?
No, I also believe that based on this court's cases in Cervantes and Acal, that is not where the analysis on the circumstances prong ends. So that would just be one factor that the court would look at. The other factor that the court would look at is what Cervantes and Acal looked at, and it's whether the offenses itself are related, whether they have similarities to each other, whether the elements are such that the elements overlap and that the the same issues, the same testimony and evidence would then overlap. So no, I would not agree that that would be enough.
Well, it's interesting. So you don't feel that an overlap is sufficiently established where the basis for the charge, in this case, the basis for the fled scene charge, was a result of the second case, in this case, the assault. Is that relevant to you that the connection does exist between the two cases? Because without the assault case, they wouldn't necessarily have discovered the fled scene case.
Well, I guess where I distinguish it is because the probable cause would not be arising from the first offense. The probable cause would have been arising from things outside of the first discovered offense, which would be an utterance, identification by the victim or some other eyewitness. And again, it doesn't then trigger the 701-109 considerations, because that's where a separate trial, those witnesses would not be necessary for the assault offense trial.
Well, I guess we've already talked about this. To think this through, where the defense was not put in a position to have to bring up the fled scene case is still a point that I think is unclear.
And I believe the defense could still bring it up. It wouldn't preclude, that the charges were charged separate or the offenses were charged separately. It wouldn't preclude the defense from bringing in the other case as necessary. But that the mentioning of the other case isn't what triggers 701-109.
Does it matter in your analysis that the defense may be required to assert the same defense with the same facts in both cases? Do you think that's irrelevant to whether there should be a joinder?
Yep.
Mr. Tsushima, Kelii Heleua seems like a case, at least on the face of it, that has a lot of similarities here. But I think, Judge Kim seemed to think that the sequence in which cases were resolved was dispositive. And if you sort of compared that case to this case, the latter incident in that case, which was the insurance fraud, was adjudicated first. What's your take on the how much that case is relevant here and whether it does provide guidance as to how we should address this case? Because it does seem to be, there was an incident involving an accident that occurred on H1, and then there's an insurance fraud, which in some way is related to it, but is really kind of a very different set of conduct. So that would seem, at least on the face of it, somewhat similar to what we have here. But one potential distinction is that the sequence of the prosecutions was different. What's your take on that?
Right. I don't believe the sequence of the prosecution of the cases matters, makes any difference. And I do agree that Kelii Heleua is not just similar, but actually it hits upon all the points that I've been making this afternoon. Because what this court said in Kelii Heleua is that, the offenses didn't occur at the same time, although the same day, just like this case, wasn't the same time. And like Kelii Heleua, those different places. Mr. Otake says, it was close, but it's still different places, so it doesn't meet the second factor. And then the third one being the most important, and that's the facts and issues involved in the charges, namely the statutory requirements of the alleged offenses, are dissimilar. And that's, again, what we have in this case. And, the defense has yet to be able to distinguish or point why that isn't an important part of this court's consideration in this case.
Because in Kelii Heleua, you would think in explaining the fact that there was an accident might be relevant to the insurance fraud case, and the fact that there was an insurance fraud might in some way be relevant to the accident, but this court appeared to discount that overlap as being something that should require or require joinder. Is that so? Again, your take is that the sequence is not dispositive?
Correct.
All right. Go ahead. Why not? Why not? Because that was something Judge Kim felt very strongly about, or appeared to feel very strongly about, that our cases, in his view, implicitly thought the sequence was very, very significant.
Because in our case, it wouldn't change the matter. So let's split the sequence. So instead, he pled to the assault against a police officer charge. And now we have the fleeing the scene case. My position wouldn't change at all. Again, there wouldn't, in order to prove the remaining case, the fleeing the scene case, the state wouldn't have to refer to the assault against police officer case at all. In fact, there'd probably be motions in limine not to bring it in. So not only like could we prove our case, but it wouldn't come in at all. It'd be so prejudicial to the defense. So I disagree with the lower court that the order would matter in this case.
Very well. Anything further for the court at this time?
Not for me.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tsushima. Mr. Otake, your rebuttal. I guess if you know, keep it brief and to the point. I guess.
Thank you. I just have a couple of important points I want to emphasize. You know, the reason why, well, the Carroll test, I still submit, is a really good test that accomplishes the policies behind the compulsory joinder statute because it protects defendants in the way that the statutes envision. And that is particularly so when you consider when it says that a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to details of the other. If you consider that as a gauge for was this time, place, and circumstance similar enough? Because and that accounts for the difference in time in some of these cases, right? Because in Kelihelewa, it was, you know, arguably the same day. And in Akau, it was 5 to 49 days. And but it's a gauge because it depends, right? But when you look at it that way, we really get into these decisions that a defendant has to make, whether to testify, whether to plead, whether to use a deferral, whether to plea bargain, whether to go to trial. And if it's the same, if you can't talk about one without the other, then it truly triggers a lot of those decisions because the cases are similar that way.
What about Kelei Heliua? Wasn't that defendant there faced with exactly those kinds of choices? Why isn't that a
And this is why, I mean, whether or not we want to say, you know, you can talk about one charge without referring to the other, if that means you have to be able to in either prosecution, these are always going to be evaluated based off of the charge that's being challenged because of the charge that was already, you know, adjudicated, right? And so the point of it is always going to be, the case that is left, can you talk about that case without talking about the other case? And in Kelihelewa, that's why the sequence mattered, because arguably when that was raised, you could talk about the neg injury accident without talking about the insurance fraud. But the reverse was probably not true. It probably wasn't insurance fraud unless you could talk about how it was made on a claim because of an accident that happened before you had insurance. So I don't think the timing of it is necessarily dispositive, but just practically speaking, we're always going to evaluate these cases from the standpoint of one case has been adjudicated and the case that we're challenging, can you talk about that case without talking about the other? And that's the difference in Kelihelewa.
Otake, we have a question from Justice Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Mr. Otake, you keep on, and others have talked about, well, you can't talk about one without mentioning the other. You can't talk about one without talking about the other. But Carroll specifically talks about going into details of the offense. So insofar as the argument, well, I wouldn't have, the reason why I got so mad was because I was involved in another case. That's not a detail of the offense. So, and you yourself have talked about mentioning it. But Carroll specifically talks about going into details of it. So just because Officer Sissoko and other officers mention it, how does that mean that the rendition of the assault on the police officer necessarily entails details of the fleeing the scene case?
And because, Your Honor, I know you focus on the word detail, I would likewise focus earlier in that where it says closely related in time, place, and circumstance that a complete account of one charge cannot be related without referring to the details of the other. Can you give a complete account of the assault against law enforcement officer case and what led to it without talking about details of the fled scene? And I would argue that details...
The details are necessary.
I would argue that details of the fled scene included the fact that they found him sitting in a white car with the same license plate with damage to it, smelling like alcohol, an hour later. I mean, I don't think it would mean details of how this car hit that car this way or that way.
No, it's the other charge, details of the other charge. It's not details of his arrest.
I understand.
The Carroll says details of the other charge, which is fleeing the scene.
Right. And I would just submit that the details of the fled scene included the car, the scrapes, the accident, the fact that he was in it. But I understand your point, Your Honor. I just want to end by saying this and going back to the policy behind these statutes. And I think it was Your Honor, Chief Justice Breckenwald, who mentioned long-term implications of this conversation today. And that's what I would like to leave the justices with, is how do we want prosecutors behaving when they make these decisions? And what guidance do we want to give them when they read this opinion? When they make these decisions of how to charge these cases, and do we want to strengthen these compulsory joinder statutes so that prosecutors do the right thing and err on the side of joining it in fairness to the defendant and to make this system more efficient? And I would suggest that a ruling in our favor would do that. And so we appreciate your time.
Very well. Thank you to both of our attorneys here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Ua ho'o ku'u ia mai ne kea aha ho'o kolo kolo ki e hano hano okomoku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned. Recording stopped.